From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. We're happy to be with you on this day. We got a lot to go over. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West will be here down at the Dallas County Republican Party chairman. He's going to be here talking about what's happening at the border, as well as what's happening with this new amnesty rule that just came down. It is just an absolute joke. You know, today is the anniversary of the DACA Act was put out that allowed Dreamers to become stay here without fear of deportation. When Barack Obama put it out, he knew it was unconstitutional. Somehow it's withstood all legal challenges. But what Joe Biden did is so much worse. And I'm going to get into that shortly. Donald Trump's going to have a rally today. Joe Biden's going to have a fundraiser. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
And the other point I would make here is there's already a provision in immigration law that allows illegal alien spouses who are married to U.S. citizens to cure their unlawful presence here in the U.S. There's already a process in place. So this executive action is actually unnecessary.
Yeah, this is the executive action. We're a pitch battle on immigration as Biden again goes around Congress to try and nationalize millions of illegals. And details of the horrific murder of Rachel Marin at the hands of an alien criminal emerge.
Number two.
Right now, we're careening towards a historic performance for Republican presidential candidate, the likes of which we have not seen in 6 decades.
Anybody who believes that Donald Trump will get 30% of the black male vote, I got a bridge down there on Johns Island and I'll sell you.
Let's see. Trump gunning for the black vote, making gains as well. Will the polls translate to votes? What's the message and how Joe Biden plans to hit back?
Number one.
You all have called this the cheap fakes video, and that's exactly what they are. They are cheap fakes video. They are done in bad faith. These right-wing, the right-wing critics of the president have a credibility problem.
Here we go. That is KJP. This is the most laughable explanation ever, and there's a lot of laughable explanations. Intriguing poll as Trump up big in Iowa, a virtual dead heat in Wisconsin, as the White House scrambles to tell us not to believe our eyes and ears when it comes to what we see with the 82-year-old president. I'll explain. So when we watched the president freeze on stage in the audience on Juneteenth celebration last week, we watch him on the golf course with these paratroopers who landed in front of him. When we see him sit at a fundraiser and have Barack Obama grab his wrist, pat him on the back, and pull him away, we see three times in which he just seems out of sorts. So what is the explanation for it? It's our fault for editing and looking at it wrong. First, I thought they said deep fake, which means AI. So I said, wait a second, are you saying this is not him? Are you saying that someone would manipulate the video? But no, I guess people that look at this and are concerned are people trying to manipulate things. Listen to KJP try to explain this. Cut one.
You all have called this the cheap fakes video, and that's exactly what they are. They are cheap fakes video. They are done in bad faith. And some of your news organization have been very clear, have stressed that these right-wing, the right-wing critics of the president have a credibility problem because of the fact checkers have repeatedly caught them pushing misinformation, disinformation.
Look. So easy to attack right-wing press. But this is not up for discretion. The guy froze. The guy froze. And we watched it happen with Mitch McConnell. And Barack Obama must have realized that he grabbed his wrist. But if you want to say the president was, you know, thinking about something, was daydreaming, was he achieving the applause? But to get mad at people for not showing the entire video or a wider shot, how many cameras do you think we have at the G7 summit when you, as president, don't talk to anybody? So there's almost no economic reason to send people outside pool coverage. So that's what she's saying. Deep fakes, manipulated videos. Cut three.
I think that it tells you everything that we need to know about how desperate Republicans are here. And instead of talking about the president's performance in office. And what I mean by that is his legislative wins, what he's been able to do for the American people across the country. We're seeing these deep fakes, these manipulated videos. And it is, again, done in bad faith.
Okay. Look, that is the most ridiculous, inefficient answer that anybody, Jen Psaki, Kayleigh McEnany, Dana Perino, Governor Huckabee at this point, if you were press secretary and they say, yeah, this is what we're going to say, I'd go, listen, sorry, I can't say that. I have a reputation too. I got to live beyond this. I got to see if I can get a job when this is done. I cannot sit here and blame the press for not showing a wider shot, or can I say that they put pause on his celebrity-strewn event, which, by the way, was already optically a problem because he should have been with Zelensky trying to work out some type of peace summit or a framework for that, which he had called and basically begged the American president to go to, while Donald Trump, his opponent, goes to Michigan and meets with black leaders. So it was already optically bad. And then you have the freeze frame, and then you have that explanation. Pretty terrible. You know what's worse? What the president's going to be doing today. So far, we know from January till May, there's been 1.4 million undocumented immigrants, with a staggering coming from a staggering 177 countries. I only think there's 190 countries on the planet. We have 177 who are represented through our border. That's what this guy's done. And in response, he came down and said, I want a bipartisan legislation. He didn't. It was part of a deal Republicans requested in order to get foreign aid out. And they didn't like the bipartisan deal. They walked away. And now Democrats have a talking point, but no legitimate talking point. And now we see that the current president is totally unserious about the executive orders he did last week. Because today, on the anniversary of DACA 12 years ago, he announced plans to clear the way for hundreds of thousands, many of 500,000 illegal immigrants married to U.S. citizens to apply for legal residency. Now, there are some things that you got to be here 10 years. You can't commit a crime. You got to pass the background check. But what you're doing is you're telling people sooner or later, if you come over, don't commit a crime, you can stay. Don't go through the process. Don't ask for asylum. Don't ask for citizenship. Sooner or later, they'll give in. I'll bring my kids over. Young, they're not American citizens automatically, but DACA will let them stay. I'll go over, I'll meet some woman, I'll date her for 10 years, maybe get married. And then when they try to get rid of me, some president will walk by and just say, I can stay. Well, your dream has come true. He will do this today. And this will please his extreme left. My hope is will not withstand a congressional challenge. Look, when it comes to dreamers, think about this. You come over from Mexico, El Salvador, Colombia, Brazil. Your parents bring you over. You're 1 year old. You're an infant. You're two. You're three. You're not an American citizen. You're born elsewhere. But you go to school system because we allow it to happen. You go through 12th grade. Then you even apply for a college. And then Barack Obama turned around and said, can we naturalize these guys, the dreamers, whose parents brought them here without any, they had no say, so they were too young. Now, there's a strong argument either way, but this is a niche group. It's impossible to replicate. So we'll do this, we'll sunset it, and we'll pass it. That was up for debate with immigration reform. Barack Obama did it, withstood a legal challenge. But this is unbelievable. These are adults who choose to come here. They stay here, whether it's overstaying their visa or they even had a visa. They get married, and guess what? Now they can stay. I mean, to me, if that's my policy, if I'm his campaign manager, I'm sick about this. Again, circumventing Congress, going to your extreme left, like student loans, circumventing the judiciary, and forgiving loans, giving the stiff arm to everybody that went to a vocational college or no college, or actually was idiotic enough to pay off their own loans. So that's what he's doing. And that's what the message is being sent. I think it's absolutely terrible that he's doing it. And people are going to be happy. He's going to act like a real hero. He's going to talk about Republicans walking away from legislation. Donald Trump ripping families away. Listen, they were breaking the law. They crossed the border. Just like if you're a DWI, you have kids in the back, you separate from your kids. That's what Tom Homan was doing. That lasted a week or two. And they said it was too strict. The optics too bad. So they went back to strict policies to keep people out. And now you have lost 82,000 children. We don't know where they are, many of which are farmhands. We are just going into the ether. And this administration is going to say Donald Trump is out there working kids to death. What Donald Trump is going to do, and 62% of the country minimum is for it, is rounding up those people who overstayed their visas, who are here illegally, and sending them back. And a lot of people are looking forward to that. They think they can run against it. Democrats don't know what to do with it because the majority of the country are fed up what's happening to their cities and their towns. Listen to Congressman Chip Roy, Cut 26.
Those 62% of Americans, they're dead correct. We need to have a mass deportation. By the way, 87% of Americans believe we should pass federal law to require proof of citizenship to vote in federal elections. I've got a bill to do that, the SAVE Act. You know, while Democrats want to talk about foreign interference in elections and that Republicans are doing that, guess what? It's the Democrats who are literally importing people with the specific purpose of actually impacting elections.
There's no doubt about it. A lot more to discuss. The ruining of our major cities out in California, it's beginning to turn. 44% approval rating for Gavin Newsom. That's your future because you let crime run rampant. You let illegal immigrants get free college, free health care, free room, free board. Your homeless gets to stay on the streets. You can commit crimes and steal things up to $1,000. And guess what? Your liberal policies have brought chaos. Nicholas Kristof wrote about that in the New York Times. He is a liberal, and he's saying, let's admit these liberal policies have failed. And what's this president doing? Someone told him, you were really harsh 2 weeks ago with executive orders, so let's do something really lefty. And that's what he's doing today. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Next to you, 1-866-408-7669. Or you could just go to BrianKilmeade.com, click on comments, and I'll be able to read them out loud. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Holy cow, folks. Holy cow. Look at this. Joe Biden was up by 80 points among this group back at this point in 2020. Look at where that margin has careened down towards. It's now just, get this, 37 points. I just never seen anything like this. I'm like speechless because you always look at history and you go, okay, this is a historic moment. If this polling is anywhere near correct, we are looking at a historic moment right now where black voters under the age of 50, which have historically been such a big part of the Democratic coalition, are leaving it in droves.
That's pretty amazing because that was on CNN, home of the next debate, which I really worry about from Donald Trump's perspective because of the unfairness and the hatred both moderators have for him. And it's going to be old January 6th, but I digress. The one thing the president's doing, I told you, he went to South Bronx. You watch the success of that appearance, and then you see him go over to Detroit. You know he's going to be going over to major cities. He's going to go to Philadelphia after that. Today he's going to be in Racine, not an urban environment, a town in Wisconsin. But the black vote is something that Donald Trump is absolutely targeting. And I don't care. I'd like to see him win. Obviously, I think he'd be a much better president than this president. But in the big picture, it shows a good precedent because I think every politician, all these parties should go to areas in which they're not necessarily going to get 50% of the vote. Maybe they even unliked. But hear people out. Why don't they like you? Why don't they like your party? What do you hear? What do you need? What aren't you getting? And the first thing you do, your greatest skill is to listen and see if you can help. So let me break down some of these polls. So we know this in terms of Wisconsin, where the former president's going today. He's trailing by, he's got 47% of the vote. Now he ended up last time with, in 2020, he had 49%. Joe Biden had 49% of the vote. He had 47% of the vote. Right now it's slightly different. It is Trump has 45% of the vote now. So we'll see how that plays out. So looking at the black vote, what Donald Trump is finding, that he's getting more and more of the black vote, depending on the city he's in. But as soon as you get over 8, that's when they begin to panic. And with the president's got, the former president's got is 21% in some polls, in some polls as much as 30%. So he's trying to take a bite out of those cities. And guess what happens when you do that? It forces money, revenue, and the former and the current president to go campaign there. So here, new polling is in when it comes to a lot on the conviction, but when it comes to blacks voting, the fact is when you get into double digits, Democrats begin to panic, which is on the surface pretty terrible. But the other thing is people are finding is that as the president makes gains in New Hampshire, gains in Virginia, where they're in a virtual dead heat, opening up more states that Joe Biden has to defend, now in Wisconsin, but everyone figured that, they're also finding that maybe when you have the president freeze up like he's been freezing up, when you have him move and sometimes express his speeches almost inaudibly because he strings one word together, but there's a story in today's Daily Mail from the senior political reporter there, Charlie Spearing. He says that Democrats are waiting to see how Biden does in this debate. And if he does bad, he could be out. Cut 10.
You see Democrats out there right now already predicting that Joe Biden is going to lose the debate. But what they're really concerned about is that there's just going to be one devastating moment that will really crater his possibilities of getting elected. If that happens, then that's when they're going to have the tough conversations with the Biden family. That's when they're going to have the tough conversations with the rest of the party, when they all unite.
I have news for you. I'm not really sure they're going to unite. And I'm not sure that they have leverage over President Biden. He's got the White House. Unless he falls, literally falls, unless he has some type of an attack, there's no way you're getting him out. And as Michael LaRosa said, former chief of staff to Jill Biden, to me on One Nation Saturday night, he said, what people have to understand is the Bidens always feel like the press was against him. Never got enough attention when he was senator. As vice president, didn't get most of the stuff he said that was written about him was disparaging. And now he expects all this negative press. But he's done the impossible. He's made a Democratic president and nominee hard to write for and root for, as the Washington Post and New York Times is finding. I don't think he would even speak to the New York Times now. Do you believe that? You know the way the New York Times treats Donald Trump? Joe Biden's complaining about his treatment. So now they're not speaking to each other. Here's more from Charlie Spearing on his source, Scott 11.
Right now, Nancy Pelosi is probably Joe Biden's biggest offender. She is 83. She thinks of Joe Biden as the young one. And she is absolutely the number one defender of Joe Biden at this point. Bill Clinton, as you mentioned earlier, he might have other motivations. And we all know that Barack Obama once tried to keep Biden off the ticket. He succeeded in 2016, making the way for Hillary, who eventually lost. He tried to keep Joe Biden from running in 2020. That didn't work. And ultimately, Obama had to be the one to quietly behind the scenes tell everybody else to quit so that Joe could win, because it was very obvious that Bernie Sanders was knocking at the door.
Right. So they rigged the thing against Bernie Sanders, too. And keep in mind, you know, Joe Biden didn't get any primary. He didn't get primary like Jimmy Carter did. Didn't he get primary like George H.W. Bush did? So he had not a test. When RFK went to run, they said, no, and I'm putting you on the ballot. So he had actually leave the party as a Kennedy. And he said Robert Kennedy, his dad, was his idol. Think about how he got here. We'll talk to Lieutenant Colonel Alan West about that.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
But what's really needed at the border? I mean, everybody can talk a good game, but you can't really change what's happening at the border unless you have legislation, unless you have real resources and funding and support that is sustainable over time to make a big difference down at the border. So there's no magic wand that can be waved here to make it all go away.
That is such crap. Are you kidding me? We already watched the magic wand, everything possible to be done, the wall being built, asylum being denied, 20,000 Marines on the southern border, no Chinese coming through, zero Chinese, sorry. That one piece of paper, not good enough. Your country does not share your background checks. We have no idea who you are. You can't come in. That all can happen. The same way you could do the executive order with the 500,000 people you're going to about to legalize because they came here illegally and they married Americans. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West with us right now. Admiral Kirby can't believe that. Can he, Colonel?
Well, what is great being with you and great seeing you down here in Dallas, Texas last
week. Thanks for coming out.
Oh, my pleasure. You know, this guy, Kirby, is really the reincarnation of Baghdad Bob. And I just don't understand how he can stand there and think he can, you know, just put out this propaganda and we're supposed to believe him. Look, none of this happened at our border because of legislation. It all happened because of Joe Biden and unconstitutional executive actions, which he is continuing to do now with this plan to provide amnesty, a citizenship to people, as you just articulated. And he does not have the constitutional power to do so. And when he is talking about more resources on the border, you don't need more resources on the border. You just need to do what you're supposed to do. You look at the ICE deportations and detainments, they're at a record low because the Biden administration has told ICE not to do its job, just the same as it's told the Border Patrol agents not to do their job, and it opened up the catch and release. The fact that Kirby won't address the hundreds of thousands of single military-aged males. And think about the young 13-year-old girl who was just raped by an illegal immigrant there in New York, or the mom in Maryland who was killed, mother of five who was killed by an illegal immigrant. We have an epidemic, and it's all because of Joe Biden's policies.
And we'll see what's going to happen now. 500,000 people, he's going to look like a hero to who? To whom is he going to look like a hero to? Those people that broke our laws, hooked up with an American, and now they get to stay. Now, with DACA, you could say, well, I was 2 years old. I didn't even know where I was. It's the only country I've ever known. There's a sentiment there. This should be part of a program, but there's a sentiment there, especially when there was an incentive to serve in the military as a way to get your citizenship. But you could honestly say, I came here as an infant. I went to school. I go to college, and I find out I'm an illegal. These dreamers, that's a separate conversation. This was all intentional.
Yes, it's totally intentional. And think about what the message extends is that you're a single military age male or female. You come into this country legally. Just find an American to hook up with. And I would not put it past the cartel members to, you know, provide financial resources to individuals to say, I'll marry an American, because what are the cartels doing already? They're providing financial resources to people to go down to the border and pick up illegals and to disperse them across our country. So, and we're picking them up constantly down in the border zone there and here in Texas. So this has a very, very bad way that it can go. And again, Joe Biden does not have the constitutional authority to do that. In matters of immigration and naturalization, it goes to Article 1, which is the legislative branch in our Constitution.
So I want you to hear about I want you to hear what's going on with this murder of this woman last year by an illegal immigrant from El Salvador. So her name, as you know, she's been all over the papers, is Rachel Marin. And she was taken out and she was murdered. She was raped and she was murdered. You see her picture all over the channel. Well, it turns out this Victor Hernandez, a gang member. He tried to get through three separate times. First in El Paso, rejected. Then twice in New Mexico, rejected. The fourth time, he's a gotaway. He gets in, and he's killed twice. What does that tell you? On the first encounter, when he fails that background check, the next move, you should be arrested. Wait a second. You're a criminal. We told you no. Come with me. You're going to jail.
Well, that lets you know that the system is broken. There are no processes and procedures in place to flag these individuals that once that first time you get the flag, then you don't get a chance to come back in. And if you try to come back in that second time, you are arrested. You are detained. You're not just saying, okay, you know, you can go back, and then you try to find a different way. And that's one of the things we are concerned about in West Texas, those individuals that don't want to be, caught. They don't want to be tracked, and they're doing everything to be one of those gotaways. So think about this illegal immigrant that you just talked about. Now, based upon what Joe Biden has done, if he could have gotten into this country and supposedly married an American citizen and, you know, just hang out for the next 10 years, whatever Joe Biden will change it to, then next thing you know, he gets offered citizenship. So we have got to have a better database, a better tracking system, and especially with the terrorists that we see, you know, about the Tajikistans, you know, about, I think, the Syrian illegal immigrants who tried to drive a truck onto Marine Corps base Quantico not too long ago.
Yeah, that too. And then we're finding out more and more information about other illegals that are here. And then we have the FBI saying five alarms because of people coming through our border. And I have no idea what 24,000 Chinese, how they got out of their country. They don't walk through Central America. They're not going through the Darien Gap. They get dropped off in Mexico and they come walking through. And evidently, add to this, they're rude at the border. They move past everybody else and demand to be let go. And we let them go into the country. They only have one sheet of paper. They don't have passports. Why is that not reason to get rejected?
It should be a reason to be rejected. But without a doubt, this administration, for whatever reason, is aiding and abetting our enemies. China is, without a doubt, our number one geopolitical foe. And the Biden administration is enriching a terrorist organization, which is what the cartels are. So life is good. Business is good for these people. And China and the cartels are the ones who are working in cahoots to manufacture fentanyl, bring it across the border, and various and sundry other bad things. This is not just about Mexicans. This is not just about Central America. This is about the world coming across the border into the United States of America illegally.
I want to talk about what's happening with this president twice freezing up. Looks like Barack Obama was leading him off the stage at that Los Angeles event. And then we had this situation where he froze at the Juneteenth concert. First off, your thoughts about what you've seen.
There is no doubt that we have a cognitive issue with the president of the United States of America. And you did not mention where you had the Italian president, prime minister, that had to guide him back to be with the group during the G7. And I just think that somebody has to step up and say, this is elderly abuse, what we see happening to Joe Biden. I don't know if Joe Biden is the one that's standing in the way, but someone needs to do what is necessary, not just to protect Joe Biden, but to protect the United States of America.
So I want you to hear, he's also losing the black vote rapidly. Mm-hmm. On that freeze, Charlemagne the God on a separate podcast, not The Breakfast Show, he said this with Andrew Schultz. He has the Brilliant Idiots podcast. Cut 15.
President Biden don't know what's going on. Kirk Franklin is on stage performing. The whole front row is Joe Biden.
The whole front row is Joe Biden?
I just want to know why Joe Biden is just sitting there like he's
scared.
Yo, Joe Biden probably was thinking, yo, it hasn't been this many black people on the White House lawn since they built this place. Those black people on the Hill got y'all doing corny, goofy stuff like that, and they got y'all, you know, like one thing about those elected officials, especially the Democrats, man, they talk about the people they don't even talk to. Go down to Duval Day and see what the hood really thinks about something, man.
Your thoughts?
Well, he's absolutely right, and I think you heard the black pastor thank President Trump in Detroit for coming to the hood. And the Democrat Party and Democrat candidates have always played lip service to the black community, but their soft bigotry of low expectations and what they have done to the black community and our inner city urban centers is just absolutely criminal. They have destroyed the family. They have destroyed economic opportunities. They do not support educational freedom, and they relegate black kids to failing schools. And then you have people like Kathy Hochul that, you know, says such disingenuous things, such as black kids don't know how to, you know, use computers. Yeah, I mean, but for whatever reason, I guess they think they can get away with it. Not anymore. I think that the patronizing that they have been doing has come to an end.
Here's Michael Taylor, who, by the way, is the Biden campaign communications director. He is black, by the way, on MSNBC. Cut 16.
Why do you think the president is losing support with these voters?
Well, listen, this campaign is going to do very good amongst black voters because no administration has done more for black America than the Biden-Harris administration.
Why is he losing support right now?
Well, listen, this is what the campaign is for.
So they're asking some tough questions. He does not have the answer.
No, he doesn't. He does have the answer, but he does not want to give the answer. And the answer is that when you look at the policies of the President Trump's administration, when he supported historical black colleges and universities, the economic empowerment zones in the inner cities that he used working through with Dr. Ben Carson, and also the criminal justice reform, which the left calls it, you know, the bail reform. That's completely different. But blacks know, everybody knows, Hispanic, Asians, whatever, they know that their dollar went further at the grocery store, their dollar went further at the gas station with Trump than it does with Joe Biden. And again, they're tired of the patronizing lip service.
Yeah, we'll see. I think there's a lot riding on. There's a lot riding on this debate. The story in the Daily Mail today, I'll play a little bit later, that says they're going to have the elders come see him if he bombs out on this debate because his poll numbers are so bad. I actually think that would make winning for Republicans harder. Your thoughts?
I think that no matter who it is, Gretchen Whitmer, Gavin Newsom, it's about the policies. It's not about the person. So they can replace Joe Biden, put another person in there, Phil Murphy, Pritzker from Illinois, but it's the same policies. And that's what everybody needs to be focused on. Not so much Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, but whether the policies that are failing the American people.
Thanks so much, Colonel Alan West. He is the Dallas County Republican Party chairman, and thanks to you coming down and helping us christen KLIF. And we hope you have a long run there, and we'll hope to see you again in person, Colonel.
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to that, my friend. Take care.
Yes, thank you. Meanwhile, when we come back, Dan Hoffman joins us on Russia, Vladimir Putin arriving in North Korea to reaffirm that relationship with the North Korean leader and get some more of that artillery, which is really hurting the Ukrainians in battle. Don't miss a minute, Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is not just about North Korea helping Russia prosecute its war of aggression in Ukraine, but it's a direct threat to us because of what North Korea gets in return. Russia will not cooperate with us in international forums. They will not enforce sanctions. They will not enforce embargoes against a country that has nuclear weapons that can hit not just our troops and citizens in places like Guam or even Hawaii, but the mainland of the United States.
That is Senator Tom Cotton looking at the worrying alliance with North Korea. He's going to pull the Hermit Kingdom out. They're going to find a way to capitalize on their cybersecurity advancements. And we have the one thing that the North Koreans have is artillery, and it's definitely affecting the battle in Ukraine. With us right now is former Moscow bureau chief of the CIA, Dan Hoffman. Dan, welcome back. Your thoughts about Vladimir Putin's trip?
Yeah, he's kind of going hat in hand. Visiting North Korea because Russia so desperately needs North Korean artillery to carry on their brutal invasion of Ukraine.
They want to continue to get it?
They continue to need it. And it's also part of the quid pro quo from little rocket man Kim Jong-un. I think he probably struck a deal with Russia. Remember, they met last September in the Russian Far East. And Kim Jong-un made it clear that if North Korea would continue to be Russia's military ally, which is one of the real consequences of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. We've got this new axis of tyranny where Russia is allied like never before with Iran and North Korea and China, that North Korea would want in return military technology, intelligence sharing so they can hack into our banks better. And, of course, they want diplomatic top cover, as Senator Cotton noted. Russia just vetoed U.N. sanctions monitoring of North Korea. So that's of great concern. I will tell you, and I was mentioning this on America's Newsroom this morning with Martha McCallum. I know a lot of Russian intelligence officers, and they've got to just be scratching their heads that Vladimir Putin is now so closely aligned with a nuclear-armed pariah state. And I think that only might encourage Kremlin insiders and national security officials, intelligence officers, to think even more seriously about spilling their secrets to the CIA.
Really? You think that they would rethink it? You think that they might be willing to flip?
Well, I think that's one of the reasons the CIA put out those three videos. Now, look, we don't know the metrics. We don't know how successful CIA has been, and I'm sure they're going to continue to be secret about that. But you don't keep putting videos out if it's not working. And Director Burns has made some references to the fact that this is a good time for us to be recruiting Russians and that there's been some success. Vladimir Putin has spilled a lot of blood and treasure over this war in Ukraine. You wonder what he's gotten out of it. Membership in NATO for Finland and for Sweden, over 500,000 casualties, a brain drain. Reportedly, 1 million Russians have fled. That's the smart ones who could get out. Russia's more isolated and more dependent on its long-term strategic rivals than ever before. Russia and Iran are major strategic rivals. They've always been for centuries. And so this is what Vladimir Putin's looking at. And it's weakened him to some extent, but he's managed somehow to remain in power.
How about the battlefield? He didn't get Kharkiv or yet. What could you tell us about the latest trend on the battlefield? We know they've managed to jam a lot of the drones, the Ukrainian drones. I don't know if we've overcome that, helped them overcome that yet. What have you heard?
Well, they are making, you know, small incremental gains on the battlefield. And I like to follow the Institute for the Study of War. General Keane's outstanding analysis on this war is exactly what we need. But if you look at what Russia, the gains that they've made, those incremental gains in Donbass, for what? For the massive massive spilling of all the blood and treasure that we noted. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Putin expected to take Ukraine in a couple of days, and that was a major intelligence failure accurately to assess the will and the capacity of Ukrainians to fight. And so Ukraine's still in the fight. Now, if we'd given Ukraine what they needed when they needed it, this war might have been over. And we need to win this war. Ukraine needs to win this war. If you don't like Russia's alliance with China and North Korea and Iran, you want to break it, the best way to do it is to defeat Russia on the battlefield and end the war.
So Stoltenberg told us today that they're thinking about dusting off some of the nuclear weapons they've put away and putting them strategically because Russia is beginning to grow their nuclear arsenal, and so is China. Is that a wise move?
Well, they are growing their nuclear arsenal, and we have to be concerned about that. We need to build up our own defense industrial base, and that also means our nuclear capability. I keep going back to President Reagan. You know, you and I were college kids then, and we remember that era very well, that era of peace through strength. And I just think that's been a real failure for not just this administration, but previous ones as well. We've got to build up our defense industrial base. We've got to modernize our own nuclear capability to deal with rising power China as well as Russia.
And we'll have a lot of customers because NATO now, 23 of the 32 nations are now paying 2% of their GDP on defense. I think it was about 4% in 2013. So there is making some progress. The Russians have helped, and so has Trump helped demand it. Thanks so much, Dan Hoffman.
All right, Brian. Take care.
You got it. Brian Kilmeade Show.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone, from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. Bethany Mandel will be with us shortly, co-author of Stolen Youth. Tim Brown, the Heisman Trophy winner at Notre Dame, Pro Football Hall of Famer, wide receiver with the Oakland Raiders. He'll be with us, too, six-time Pro Bowler. And we'll have Stuart Varney. We'll do a simulcast there. I'll be on Outnumbered at the top of the hour. Besides that, I don't have much going on today. We have a lot going on as a country today, and some of the explanations are just nuts about what the Joe Biden's performance on the world stage has done and the disconcerting movements and freezing moments that he's tried to pull off. No one's buying it. All right, so let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
And the other point I would make here is there's already a provision in immigration law that allows illegal alien spouses who are married to U.S. citizens to cure their unlawful presence here in the U.S. There's already a process in place. So this executive action is actually unnecessary.
That is Chad Wolf talking about the pitch battle on immigration as Joe Biden goes again around Congress to try and naturalize millions of illegal aliens and details of the horrific murder of Rachel Marin at the hands of an alien criminal emerge.
Number two.
Right now, we're careening towards a historic performance for Republican presidential candidate, the likes of which we have not seen in six decades.
Anybody who believes that Donald Trump will get 30% of the black male vote, I got a bridge down there on John's Island, I'll sell you.
Well, say, Jim Clyburn, things have certainly changed over the years, and you're now in your 80s, too. Trump gunning for the black vote, making gains. Will the polls translate to votes? What's the message that might be resonating? How Biden plans to hit back?
Number one.
You all have called this the cheap fakes video, and that's exactly what they are. They are cheap fakes video. They are done in bad faith. These right-wing, the right-wing critics of the president have a credibility problem.
Really? 2024, intriguing poll as Trump up big in Iowa and a virtual dead heat in Wisconsin as the White House scrambles to tell us not to believe our eyes and our ears when it comes to Joe. It's all a fake. Absolutely bizarre. I mean, that is the explanation. Those right-wing fakes. You watched him wander away after the paratroopers landed. You've seen him freeze on the Los Angeles celebrity stage. You watched Barack Obama grab his wrist and put his hand on his back. And then you watched him freeze during the Juneteenth celebration last week. So when Mitch McConnell froze, I didn't see anybody saying anything except for he had a head injury. He's obviously still need to recover. And they said he's going to be okay. And they were right. And we have not seen that since. Okay. But for the White House to come out and say what they said is absolutely crazy. With me right now is Bethany Mandel. Bethany joins us now, author of Stolen Youth. Bethany, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me, Ryan.
Hey, Bethany, and then thanks for being on Skype, too. So if you're watching on your app, just go to watch and just slide over and you can see her. So, Bethany, when you talk about Stolen Youth, we thought about, too, last two, especially on One Nation, I was doing a lot about this next generation being anti-Israeli, anti-Jew, anti-Semitic, pro-Hamas. Do you understand where that came from? Because I don't.
I mean, it all sort of boils down to the operating thesis of Stolen Youth, that everyone is either an oppressor or an oppressed, and that is the only paradigm with through which you can see the world. And so they have decided that Jews are European colonizers, and they are oppressing a native population, which is funny because it was probably like 15 years ago before I even had kids. I was in Israel with my husband and in what is called a settlement in the West Bank. And we were given a tour by a local resident. And he said, here's the wine press. Here's where thousands of years ago they pressed wine. And he looked at us and I looked at him and I said, well, then there was no Muslims here because they don't drink wine. And he said, bingo, exactly. There were Jews here pressing wine thousands of years ago. This is Judea. This is the land of the Jewish people. You can't get more clear than the archaeological
evidence. West Bank, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's bizarre that they are willing to deny history where there is clear historical record that that this is originally Jewish land, but they've decided that all of human civilization has to be viewed through the oppressor oppressed lens. And unfortunately, Jews are the oppressors.
Well, right now we're witnessing a situation where the Jews have to go out and wipe out Hamas. At the same time, they might be starting a war with Hezbollah. So it looks like not starting a war, but doing their best they can to get the settlers back in their houses. And they got to back Hezbollah up and able to do that. They seem to have the weaponry. They even seem to have sophisticated drones that might be able to beat the Iron Dome. Is there concern on the ground in Israel?
Yeah, it's terrifying. The entire northern part of Israel has been evacuated. And it's bizarre because we keep on being told about refugees, people who never had to flee their homes in Gaza. And yet there are refugees for the last 8 months in Israel, tens of thousands of them from the northern border and also in the Gaza envelope. And that northern border keeps on getting pushed down and down, and more people are having to flee their homes because of the threats from Hezbollah getting more and more obscene, honestly.
So they're tough. I mean, they helped bail out Assad over in Syria. They were the ones who trained a lot of the Hamas fighters. They've really taken over Lebanon. But Israel might be better off taking this fight on now rather than putting it off two more years because they're just going to get stronger. But the social media, the way it spread and the sit-ins and how it happened, do you believe from what you could tell, and this might be outside your purview, so feel free to say I have no idea, but do you believe people on the outside are fomenting this sense of unrest, this anti-Semitism, and kind of the same groups that kind of push the whole George Floyd, let's take apart racist America? Do you think these are outside groups?
I think that there's a lot of them. There have been ties to the Chinese Communist Party with a lot of these organizations. And Qatar, the country who are currently housing the Hamas leadership are funding American universities more than any other foreign government. There is an incredible story out of Texas A&M where they were funding research that was a national security risk. And they were not only funding the research, but then by virtue of the fact they were funding it, they then had access to all of the research that was being done at Texas A&M. It's a massive national security risk. And it was only because it was publicized, I think by Fox, that they were able to put a stop to that program. But there's so much foreign interference here. But there's also just this constant presence of folks who believe that socialism is the only way. I mean, all of these things have always existed in America, and they're only becoming more radical and more widespread because it's being fed to our kids in the K-12 system and then in the college system.
Yeah, I guess so. The other thing I wanted to bring you to, since you had so much in social media and how people are being manipulated, is that the governor of New York wants to be the first to ban social media for anyone, I think, under the age of 14 years old. Will that work?
I mean, it would be nice, but I don't see the enforceability mechanism being reliable there. I think a lot of the issues that face young people of a generation of kids that we're raising now boils down to parents just don't want to do their job as parents. They don't want to parent as a verb. And so they've decided that, you know, government structures have to step in and help them make these parenting decisions. It's wild to me that people ask these questions in parenting groups all the time. How do I get my kid to stop using their iPad so much? And the answer is you don't let them, you just take it away. But that seems impossible for an entire generation of parents to do.
I said Dr. Leonard Sachs was on Fox and Friends last hour and said this, cut 37.
No phone in the bedroom, no smartphone in the bedroom. At 9 o'clock at night, you take the device from your kid, you switch it off, you put it in the charger, which is going to be in your bedroom from now on, and your kid may not approve. And she may say, well, what if there's an emergency? Let her know you still have a phone in your bedroom. Your friend can call you and you'll decide if this is an emergency at two in the morning. This has to be the parent's call. You know, a lot of parents listen to National Public Radio, which says good parenting means letting kids decide. No, it doesn't. Not in this case. You have to make this call. It's not fair to dump this choice, whether to have a phone in your bedroom in the lap of your 14-year-old.
And you agree with all that, right?
100%. He is the only parenting expert that I recommend. I'm looking around on my shelves to see if I have his books within reach, but The Collapse of Parenting is probably one of the best books I've ever read.
Because it addresses the lack of ability for parents to stand up to their kids and take control.
Yep. And not just the fact that parents don't stand up to their children and actively parent as a verb, but also it identifies all the crutches that parents are using instead of actively parenting. And it's not something, they're not things that you would necessarily think of as a crutch instead of actively parenting. But he's not afraid to say the things that need to be said. And it's literally the only parenting book I recommend.
I want to get you a little bit more. He says you shouldn't start till 16, cut 38.
No social media until 16 years of age. There's a growing consensus that no child under 16 should be on social media. Some experts say 18, some experts say 16, right. But certainly 10, 12, 14-year-olds should not be on social media, so you got to lock it down. So you're going to have to install a parental monitoring app so that kids are not spending their free time on social media.
Well, that's pretty much what you've been saying, what you wrote about, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. It's funny. We just installed a home phone at my house. My 10-year-old wanted to talk to her friends. And so all the neighborhood kids now are doing the same thing because all of us have decided as a group of parents, we're not getting our kids' cell phones, but we didn't want our kids to keep on stealing our cell phones to talk to each other, to set up play dates. And so we all got home phones. And the Verizon guy who came to our houses was like, I've never installed so many landlines in my entire career. What is happening in this neighborhood? And it's because we're all banding together and deciding we're installing landlines again. We're bringing it back.
That's fantastic. I guess you can monitor what's going on down there. And your sense on banning TikTok, I'm all for it. Are you?
100%. It's a national security risk. And also Temu as well. It is as big of a risk on a national security level to have that app on your phone as well. So it's cheap. You can buy things directly from China. You can buy like toys and Tupperware. It was amazing. I used it a couple of times. But then I realized that it was such a security risk to have on my phone, and I took it off. But Temu and TikTok, they're feeding your data back to the Chinese Communist Party.
Bethany Mandel, thanks so much. Pick up her book, Stolen Youth. Appreciate it, Bethany.
Thank you.
You got it. We come back. I'll squeeze in some of your calls and some of your emails are coming in. 1-866-408-7669. Bottom of the hour, talk a little football. Also talk about this NIL push. Get this. Some of the great teams from our past in the 90s, like the 1983 North Carolina State team Jim Valvano was in, they're now banding together and suing the NCAA for them selling their likeness, the posters, the bobblehead dolls, the videos, whatever. They want to know they should get paid because everybody else is getting paid right now. Really. I'm going to find out what Tim Brown feels about that. After all, that Notre Dame team was pretty good, too. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
There's a growing and insidious trend in right-wing media, broadcast, print, and social media. It is to take highly misleading and selectively edited videos of President Biden and then use those videos to spread messages virally to cast doubt on President Biden's fitness for office. The articles are based on cheap fakes, videos of real events that are intentionally manipulated to fool viewers.
So manipulate images, manipulate video. Really? Nobody believes that. And like I said, the analogy was, look, when Mitch McConnell froze up in front of the microphone, no one said a Democrat who brought that up was saying, look, they're manipulating video. No Republican was saying, look at those Democrats. No, he had head problems. He had hit his head, had to recover, and he sometimes froze, maybe at least two or three times in public. But listen to KJP and how in sync they are with MSNBC. Cut three.
I think that it tells you everything that we need to know about how desperate Republicans are here. Instead of talking about the president's performance in office, and what I mean by that is his legislative wins, what he's been able to do for the American people across the country, we're seeing these deep fakes, these manipulated videos. And it is, again, done.
Listen, I just tell you, what they're talking about is a wide angle when the parachutists came down. We have one angle. It's pretty wide. You could see six people and one leader wandering off. In terms of the other shot, sorry, you let one pool camera in, and we saw Barack Obama grab him by the wrist, grab him again by the center of his back, and pull off a frozen former vice president. They can say whatever they want. This, to me, is the most juvenile, ridiculous spin I've ever seen in my life. Congressman Byron Donalds knows the difference. By the way, a finalist to be the number two, cut six.
America, George Orwell warned us of this, that the party was basically going to tell you not even to believe your own eyes. This is the stuff that where they can't cover up for Joe Biden anymore. This is the same party that told you that the laptop from hell was Russian disinformation. I mean, look, if I was holding Donald Trump's hand walking off stage and it put my hand in his back to escort him to the back, the media would be apoplectic. Something like that never happens. Barack Obama does it. Then they're telling everybody that don't believe what you saw. It's a joke. We know that Joe Biden is not fully with us. And this is not funny. This is serious because he wants to be president of the United States for four more years. Our country can't have that anymore.
So we watch Donald Trump is going to go in Wisconsin. He's going to Racine. We know he was just in Detroit. So he's about 2 points out or up in Wisconsin. It's too close to call. It's going to be tied by 10,000-20,000. And keep in mind, Gary Johnson got over 100,000 votes last time as a third-party candidate. These other third parties will do more damage than that to both men. I'm not sure who more. But now, unlike 2016, you got a Democratic governor who's going to be very cooperative with Joe Biden. But the question is, if his numbers continue to plummet, if inflation does not come down, if he continues to be run over on international conferences, will they replace him? So Charlie Spearing from the Daily Mail, senior political reporter, did some digging. Evidently, some Democrats are talking about a game plan just to do that. Cut nine.
What top Democrats say are telling each other is don't freak out, don't panic. Don't go public with your concerns. It'll only hurt us. What top Democrats are saying is if the worst comes to worse, there's two options. Either Joe Biden and his family do the right thing, call it quits, admit that they can't make it, and step down. But if that doesn't happen, top Democrats are saying that Nancy Pelosi, Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, Chuck Schumer will all have to unite and go to the family and tell them that it's time for Joe to go.
I mean, it's possible, but he's got to fall. He's got to literally freeze up on that debate stage. Donald Trump's, even though all the rules favor Joe Biden, if he does as bad as he's done at, let's say, the Juneteenth speech, they'll approach him. But unless there's a major medical issue, the Bidens won't budge. They expect the media and the party to turn against them. They said they were never the golden child. It's us against them, that attitude. And I think it's to Trump's advantage to go against Joe Biden. But I'm convinced he'll beat Gavin Newsom, too, and beat Governor Whitmer as well. The big advantage Dems have is abortion. And I don't know how many times they're going to play that card. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Tim Brown next.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This one a little bit wobbly. Tim Brown at the 30. Tim Brown! One man to beat. He's gone. Montgomery hangs it high. He backs Max Brown up to the 34. One man to beat again. Tim Brown will score.
Well, I think George will go back. He's not going to see Tim Brown every week. And I think what George do, he'll go back and tell his defense they did a good job, needs a little work on the offense. But every week you will not see a player like Tim Brown who beat them almost single-handedly tonight.
There you go. And that is a little of the career highlights of Tim Brown, Heisman Trophy winner at this place called Notre Dame, Pro Football Hall of Famer, wide receiver with the Raiders, Los Angeles and Oakland, nine-time Pro Bowler. But now we're talking golf. He's going to be playing at the American Century Championship. He's going to be doing that from July 10th to the 14th, and you could see that in Lake Tahoe, on Lake Park South, over in Lake Tahoe, at the Edgewood Tahoe Golf Course. Tim, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Thanks for being here.
Hey, my pleasure. Good morning to you.
Tim, what does golf mean to you?
Oh, my God, man. It's the thing that challenges me more than anything at this particular point, right? You know, no matter how good you are at golf, you could always be better. So it's a challenge every time I go out there.
And why do you play in this tournament? It seems like a blast.
Yeah, it is, man. You know, it's the ultimate competition, you know, chance for me to go up against Jerry Rice and beat his head in, you know, every chance I get. So, you know, Jerome Bennett, all these guys, man, the receivers go against each other. Notre Dame guys go against each other. It's just a really fun event for everybody.
So it's great. So, Tim, what do you think when you're hearing those highlights? Does it seem like that long ago?
It's really hard to... And it's been so many years, you know. It doesn't feel like that per se. I guess that's a good thing. I'm not feeling like I'm an old man. But when I see the dates, things, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. 87, you know? I mean, it's unreal, man. But, you know, time does pass.
I saw Skip Holtz out there winning the UFL championship. Great chance for football players to have another shot that maybe don't peak at 22, don't get to Notre Dame. Yep. I love it. But Skip Holtz is out there. Made me think of Lou Holtz. He was your coach, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's the reason why I am who I am.
In what way?
Well, look, I mean, you know, Coach came in and, you know, after a couple of days of practice, pulled me over and told me he thought I could be the best player in the country. And I pulled him over a couple of days later and said, were you just pulling my leg or did you really mean that? And you know, he instilled a work ethic in me that I didn't have at that particular point. You know, I was all about the Notre Dame education, moving on in my life, you know, marry my high school sweetheart, be a deacon in the church, you know, all those kinds of were my goals. Being a 17-year NFL Hall of Famer, I didn't have that on my repertoire or whatever. And but you know, he told me if I you know worked harder, I could be a great player, and that's what I did. And things worked out great for me.
You know, it also shows you too the different ways to motivate people. Some people you got to yell at them, right? That probably wouldn't work with you.
Absolutely would not have. You know what I mean? Matter of fact, I never forget when Fred Biletnikoff took over as a receiver coach with the Raiders, the first day practice we had with him, I mean, he must have dog cursed me, man, for running the wrong route or something. And I finished the rest of the practice with a tear in my eye. And afterwards, I went up to him and said, hey, man, my daddy don't talk to me that way. You're not going to talk to me that way. And, you know, we went 15 years after that and never had another problem.
What'd you learn from him? You guys were different players, right? He was a possession receiver. Always found a slot, an alley. I always felt like you could outrun anyone.
Yeah, you know, the great thing about Freddie is, you know, he allowed me to be me, and, you know, he'd always tell me, hey, tell the guy, he come in the receiver room, hey, you know, we're going to do this, do that. Timmy, you do what you want to do. And, I think that really helped me. There were times where I really needed him, but there were other times I felt like, you know, I could, you know, use what I had to make things happen. So.
And you did. Is it weird seeing the Raiders in Vegas? Can they build a legacy out there? I think it was necessary to move. You know, Oakland's going bankrupt. They couldn't afford to build a new stadium. Whatever the reason, I think the move was necessary. Can you see them building that legacy there?
Boy, I tell you what, it's going to be tough, man. You know, not only are they battling, you know, with the hockey team that is winning championships, you know, they didn't do it this year, but they have, you know, a couple times before, you know, they got a women's basketball team that's putting up some, I mean, it's just, you know, Vegas is that type of city, you know, everybody's going to go to the hot thing. And if you're not the hot thing, then they sell your tickets and you end up with, you know, 60% of the people there, you know, cheering for the other people, you know. So I think that's the issue that the Raiders have right now. And some kind of way, they got to find a way to win, man, to take over that city. And it's going to be hard to take over the city, but I think they need, you know, a bigger presence at this point, and hopefully they can get that done.
Yeah, I bet you they can. I just don't think there's any more promising sports city these days. So, Tim, I want you to remember this moment. Cut 33.
Leaping up the blitz, Johnson. Touchdown, Tim Brown, and that's number 100.
What an appreciative group of people here in Oakland.
They're on their feet, applauding Tim Brown in another uniform. 16 years he wore the silver and black.
For 16 years he gave him his heart.
So, Tim, there you are in Tampa getting your 100th touchdown and the Raiders fans cheering you. Do you remember that? Yeah, you hear that that ping at the end? I'm pretty sure we're going to be able to get him back and get his answer on that, because I do want to ask a couple other things. Number one, what's happened to college sports and what is about to happen to college sports? Because now you're talking about giving them a piece of the pie, and that's great for the elite athlete, but I'm wondering about the in-between, and I'm wondering about the past. Tim, I don't know if you heard the end of that highlight, but the Raider fans cheering you on your 100th touchdown catch as a member of the Tampa Bay Bucs.
Yeah, you know, it was a very awkward moment, man. You know, I don't think the fans knew what to do initially, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know to celebrate or not. But, you know, yeah, Raider Nation and I had an incredible relationship, and still do, matter of fact, to this day. And I really wasn't surprised to see them react the way they did. You know, we had conversations, throughout my career there. So, you know, it was an incredible moment for me, and certainly I think they were happy to see me get my 100 touchdown pass. You know,
So what's happened in college sports, I found astounding. I want players to get their fair share, no doubt about it. I think there has to be a situation where it's more into college education. I said it to Lou Holtz one time. He actually yelled at me on the air. College education's enough. We have to finance the rest of the athletic department. That's it. But we know that horse is out of the barn now. And now from going back to 2016, players are going to be compensated from here on in. They're even forming a union at one of the Ivy League schools. So your thoughts about where football's going, correct, of college football's going?
Oh, man, it's hard for me, man, you know, because I got sold on the education deal, and certainly, you know, I played 17 years in the NFL, but, you know, my life the last 18, 19, 20 years has been based on the fact that I'm thankful I have that education to be able to move forward and do some incredible things in life. So, it's hard for me. It really is, you know, because, you know, the thing about a college locker room is probably the most – segregated place, and I don't mean that from a racial standpoint, but from a financial standpoint. You have the poorest of all people, and now you're saying that the colleges are going to say, and the NIL people are saying, okay, I'll pay you, but I'm not going to pay this kid.
Yep.
I'll pay this kid. And, you know, and so now you're going to say you're going to pay everybody the same amount of money. You know, that's not going to happen, man. I mean, this is the same thing that was happening back in the day. You know, people are going to get paid more or going to get people whatever. And it shouldn't, you know, it shouldn't be. So I just think it's a problem waiting to happen. It's going to cause more issues. And, you know, people are talking about taxes and all that kind of stuff, man. Forget that. The fact that you're going to have some kid sitting in the corner of a locker room feeling like he's left out should be more than enough for people to think about what they're doing. But
also,
that's not happening.
At the end of Notre Dame, after 3 years, Alabama's going to step up and offer you more money. Maybe you leave. So the 1983 North Carolina State team, national champions, Jim Valvano, they're now coming together, suing the NCAA, saying, you got to pay us. Darryl Johnston of the Cowboys, now Fox broadcaster and vice president of UFL, said this about where this whole thing is heading. Cut 34.
You were going into college at that time.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Should the 83 team get paid? They're all in their 50s and 60s now.
Yeah, it's going to be the first group that kind of steps out and does this. We had an undefeated college football team in 1987, the Doug Flutie moments. There's so many iconic moments in college sports, and how many more people are going to step forward now?
Your thoughts? I mean, this is unbelievable, correct, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, what about all the Heisman winners?
Yeah.
You know, why don't we get together and say, hey, look, you know, we were the best players. it's crazy, man, where this thing is going. And it doesn't seem like there's going to be any stop to it. But it's just unfortunate. You know, college football was a beautiful, beautiful thing. And now it's a job, man. It's a job. And that's what, you know, that's been the difference. You know, that's what I would tell people the difference was with college. You love college football. You love high school football. But once you got to the pros, man, that was a job, man. If you didn't perform, you were going to be out, you know. And now to have 18-19-year-old kids having to deal with that same situation is, you know, I think it's going to be tough.
Hey, check out Tim Brown. Always love talking to you, Tim. Edgewood Tahoe Golf Course, Highway 50, Lake Parkway South in Lake Tahoe, Nevada. The 35th year of the American Century Championships. NBC Sports owns it. Tim, best of luck.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. I'll have a little bit of time on the back end of this. Yesterday, we were on with Harris Faulkner, Fox News Channel. Hope it doesn't throw you off if you're listening on the radio. But we share networks, share audiences. And now we're going to do the same thing on Fox Business Network, and we're going to do it with Stuart Varney in a matter of moments. It's going to come to us. But these are the same topics we're talking about, but it's another chance to see what the whole – by the way, our studio looks great. They totally revamped it, and it's going to be continue to have different colors in the background. We've got flat screens everywhere, and it'll be a good opportunity to go on FBN. So here's Stuart interviewing me.
Today. It's almost 10:51. That means it's time for Brian Kilmeade, who will miraculously appear on the screen on the right-hand side. All right, Brian, the first presidential debate less than 2 weeks away. A former CNN analyst says the rules of the debate seem to be pro-Biden. Watch this.
I do think it helps Biden because I think Trump just tries to get you off your pace, off your rhythm, off your game, right? Just by talking and talking and talking and talking. So that's rule one, benefit Biden one. He struggles more with these live performance kind of things than does Trump. So you can't interact with your campaign or advisors in any way during the breaks, but you can just sort of can kind of regroup, figure out what my message wants to should be. How have I done? So I think that's a good thing for Biden.
Okay. Brian, this debate, to me, it's make or break for Biden. One little slip and he's in real trouble. What do you say?
I think not so much a slip, but a freeze. You know, the Mitch McConnell freeze, which he admitted he hit his head and he was having trouble. That was the good old days when people say, I can trust what I'm seeing. I don't think anyone's out to get me. He froze. And that's what we're watching Joe Biden, maybe for a different reason. But he froze twice. He wandered off once. That's not politics. That's a fact. But on what Chris Caliza was saying, the normal debate is 2 hours, no breaks. Now there's going to be 90 minutes, two breaks. You can't have people consult with you. Trump doesn't need any consultation. We both know that. This is what's going to help him. No audience. However, if the audience is pro-Biden, it would have worked against Trump because he gets angry on things like that. Mm. I personally agree that these are set up to help Joe Biden. But oftentimes, Joe Biden got bailed out by an interruption. Marjorie Taylor Greene actually saved him on the State of the Union. Watch it back. I did. He was starting to lose his way in the copy and the prompter. And she came out, yelled. He responded once. He looks like a hero. Now he's going to finish his sentences, try to define that Donald Trump took separated families at the border. He's going to say that, you know, it was a mess when I got here. He's going to say inflation was 9% when I took over. And Trump is going to have to keep his powder dry. I actually think on a marker, he's going to write stuff down. He goes, let me take you one by one. And I think even though it's set up for him to do well, I think that Trump is going to work to his advantage. Trump was good interrupting with five people, but one-on-one, I'm not too sure that he needs to do that this time because we got fact against fact. And what they're going to say, what I worry about is the moderators. I worry that Jake Tapper, Dana Bash are going to go January 6th. Are you going to accept the results of the election? January 6th. Are you going to accept the results of the election? Are you going to go for retribution? And it's going to be defend your record, Joe Biden. That's what I worry about.
Listen to this one. Washington Post columnist Kathleen Parker, she's got a solution for Kamala Harris's popularity problem. She suggests Hillary Clinton should take her place. I mean, really, first of all, how would you get Kamala Harris to step aside?
She's not going to do it unless you put her in the Supreme Court. If Sotomayor steps aside, he goes, listen, Kamala, I need your brilliance at the Supreme Court for the next 30 years. That would do it. Besides that, unless she decides she wants to be the next governor and maybe she does not like Washington, she wants to go there. She's 59. I don't see her doing that. Nobody said that. So I don't see that happening. The other thing is, Stuart, they keep forgetting Hillary Clinton is the most unpopular major political figure maybe in modern political history. She's not liked. I mean, she does a terrible play on Broadway. People cheer for her on Broadway, but they don't cheer with her in the breadbasket of the country. They don't like her, right? They don't like her. She's not a moderate. She's not a good person. She hates the military. She doesn't campaign hard. She forgot to campaign in three separate states. She is not the backstop. Whether you like it or not, Barack Obama is popular. You know, believe it or not, despite all his transgressions, Bill Clinton, if he was in better shape, is popular. I'm not saying Democrats are unpopular. I'm saying she is unpopular. That's a bad move. Now, Governor Whitmer, they feel has more potential, as a lot of unknowns. She might make people feel better about the ticket. Hillary won't. Hillary will make sure more people vote for Trump.
Democrats need a plan B, and they don't have one. Brian Kilmeade, all good stuff. See you again soon. Thank you very much, Brian.
Right. Thank you, Stuart. Appreciate it. Quick announcement, too, and we'll get to the phones in a second. I can't believe how quick this is coming up. But in 2 weeks, on the 29th, I'm going to be in Indianapolis, Indiana. I want you to go to BrianKilmeade.com. It's going to be History, Liberty, and Laughs Tour. Some tickets left and some meet and greet opportunities remain. And then next month, it's filling up quick, too, in Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. That'll be in Stroudsburg. I'll be there on the I'll be there on the 27th. So just go to BrianKilmeade.com for that, and I'll have a chance to drive to that. That'll be great, and I hope to see everyone in person. What it do is gives me a chance to talk about Teddy and Booker T, the president and freedom fighter, George Washington's Secret Six, Thomas Jefferson, the Tripoli Pirates, Andrew Jackson, the Miracle of New Orleans, Sam Houston, the Alamo Avengers, and be able to go through American history in a very patriotic, inspirational, motivational way, and we also bring some moments to life. In an inimitable fashion, having fun, but keeping it accurate, telling the story as we come up on year 250 of our existence. Joseph, you're listening in New Jersey. Hey, Joe.
Hey, how are you, Brian? I'm a retired New York City fireman, and I met you on September 11th because I was down there. I got there a lot later than most, a lot of the heroes, but, I didn't know what was going on, and you kind of filled me in about what was going on.
You mean on 9/11, 2001?
Yes, you were down there. You were by City Hall, weren't you?
Oh, yeah, I got down there right away, right after I got off the air.
Yes, I didn't know what was going on. We were getting different reports. I went up to you, I recognized you, and you kind of filled me in what was going on. I won't forget it. I know you probably don't remember me, but I remember meeting you.
I'll remember if I saw you, Joe. So you're still on the job now?
No, I retired.
Okay.
And I'm living. I agree with most of the things you say, but I told you the guy, the screener. Our country is different than it used to be. It's not 1950 that we have a stable economy and we can support democracies throughout the world anymore. We're a failing nation. I hate to say that. As far as we owe $30 trillion. And I want to help Israel. We have to help.
Hey, Joe, I appreciate your point of view, but everyone's helping. They're spending more. We can lead. We don't have to pay.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. This is going to be a big hour. Kellyanne Conway is standing by. Jimmy Failla at the bottom of the hour. Then I'm going to do a sports roundup and get ready to do Outnumbered at the top of the hour. Kind of excited. My live show, when arguably I have as much fun as I do on the radio, Indianapolis, Indiana on the 29th. Just a handful of tickets left. Meet and greet opportunities. The fun I have is before the show, about 5 p.m. Got a chance to answer your question, take pictures, and sign Teddy and Booker T. In Indianapolis. So go there before it's sold out. And then at the end of the month of July, I'll be in Stroudsburg. So it's all there. It's on my website. Hope to see you there in person. There's so much going on right now. The President of the United States, the former President of the United States, is going to be in Wisconsin today in Racine. The current President of the United States is going to Virginia to raise some money with Terry McAuliffe and Bill and the Clintons. Kellyanne Conway joins us now, former senior special, former senior counselor to President Trump, author of the book, Here's the Deal. Kellyanne, welcome, and a Fox News contributor, of course. Welcome back, Kellyanne.
Hey, Brian, thank you. What's cooking today?
Yeah, and by the way, I didn't know you had your podcast role, and I forgot, The Campaign Managers with Kellyanne Conway and David Plouffe. First off, Kellyanne, I love that the president, I think it's good for the country for the president to go into Detroit. He's going to be planning to go to Philadelphia. I love that he went to the South Bronx. And just said, what do you need? What's going on? I want to make some inroads. I'd love to get your vote. So few Republicans are asking for the vote in urban environments.
It's so true. They always go for the 50% plus one calculation, Brian, and that's a mistake. What do I mean? They always say, well, where can I get, what groups can I get the majority with? You need to improve the margins of the typical Republican to actually win. So I'm going to name five groups for you that President Trump does not need to get anywhere near 50% among them and still become the next president of the United States. African-Americans, Hispanics, young people, labor union households, some groups, well, women overall. He doesn't need 50% of any of those groups. He just needs to do much better than Republicans typically do, number one. And number two, he needs to erode, I think capture that erosion, that natural migration and attrition away from Joe Biden and the Democratic Party among those constituencies. And people say, well, women are going to vote for Biden. Guess what? The real gender gap is Joe Biden's gender gap among men. It's about 18% difference in some of the national polls. And in some of the swing states, like the Iowa poll yesterday that shows Donald Trump beating Joe Biden by 18 points in Iowa, Brian, a state that Obama Biden carried twice, that is clearly in the red camp now. Statewide officials, congressional seats, and of course the presidency. Why is this important? Because Joe Biden he's making the gender gap among men for the Democratic Party a complete cavernous abyss. They just don't know how to speak to working America. They don't know how to get their heads out of the elites, out of the fundraisers in Hollywood, out of Obama escorting him off the stage, out of his friends in the tech community and the media community and the Hollywood community. They simply don't know how to go talk to America. I don't think we're very far removed from President Obama's famous statement that the people are clinging to their God, their guns, their Bibles. Yeah. You've got Joe Biden basically exacting an entire presidency that sounds like Hillary Clinton's deplorable, irredeemable comments. They look down on so much of America, and those Americans, whether in the South Bronx or Wildwood, New Jersey, or Detroit, Michigan, they see Donald Trump not just speak up and put up, and they see him show up. And I think that's the most important thing. You've got to show up in these communities so that they feel. And by the way, this is something people missed in 2016, and it's happening again for Trump. When Donald Trump goes into the South Bronx or Detroit, I'm telling you the headlines the day before, day of, and day after, or days after, Brian, talk about that in a very factual way. Trump to Detroit, I see you. Or Trump to black community, black church, I'm with you, I hear you. when you get the headlines like that, just generic factual headlines, people read that and say, wow, he literally went there. He literally went there, a place where Republicans yeah. think that they shouldn't go.
Right. And by the way, the candidate can learn something, too. They have one image of what it's like in a certain city. They can't see every city in every state. And they say, wow, when I left, I got a totally different opinion about what the city needs after talking to people. You become a better politician, a better leader. So just look at the numbers. They say the polls show Joe Biden's approval within the black community is down to 70%, down from 86% in 2020. Trump has cut into Biden's coalition, tripling his support for black voters over the last 4 years from 7% now to 21%. What does 21%, if these polls convert to votes, what does that do for the result of this election?
It's game over. If President Trump were to get 21% of the black vote, if he were to get 40% of the Hispanic vote, if he were to get 47% of the female vote, if he were to get 38% of the young vote, it's over. And why is that? Because you were talking about the seven swing states, Brian, where the more racially diverse ones, Georgia, Arizona, Nevada, for example, is where Trump's real strength right now against Biden lies. Biden's campaign, believe it or not, here's the greatest irony of the day. But the old rich white guy is looking for old rich white guys and gals to vote for him in states like Wisconsin, which is over 80% white only, in states like Michigan and Pennsylvania, which is over 75% white only in the population. So the greatest irony for the party of Barack Obama and AOC and Hakeem Jeffries and Kamala Harris is that Joe Biden is stuck trying to get more of the white vote to actually eke out a second term. So yeah. Trump eats into that. Again, folks, he doesn't need to get 50%. He doesn't need anywhere near it. He gets 21, 22, 25% of the black vote, and this is over. Now, many of them are right now the voters are, the definers are people who maybe didn't vote in 2022, maybe voted in 2020, but they're not as reliable a voting block by their own reporting. And frankly, some of them weren't eligible to vote. They're 18 to 25. So they weren't eligible to vote in 2016 and some of them 2020. So they could be first-time voters that he's bringing into the party also. If you get a first-time voter who is Hispanic or African-American and they're voting for Trump the first time they're ever voting in a presidential election, they may stick with the Republican Party for decades to come. Now, here's my caveat, and here's my message. Senate candidates, Republican House candidates, sharpen it up. You are underperforming President Trump, particularly our Senate candidates in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, Nevada, Montana. You're underperforming President Trump in all these polls. You can't rely only on his reach, on his expanding his map, on the energy and enthusiasm that he's generating. They've got to do what he does. They've got to be not a generic Republican mm-hmm. losing to incumbent, well-known Democrats. They've got to become very well-defined Republicans and center-right conservative candidates who are taking on the left, are making gotcha. those senators, Brian, eat and own all of Biden's failings and flailings.
I hear you. Kellyanne, I want you to hear, so the front story in the Politico was something we already kind of got a taste of Monday, and that is they're going to go after convicted felon Donald Trump. Listen.
This election is between a convicted criminal who's only out for himself and a president who's fighting for your family.
They tested this and they're going to hit him with it hard. Trump, Biden's going to bring it up at the debate next week. What's your counter?
The counter is it sounds like they were even abandoning this because lately they were trying to go to Donald Trump's mental acuity, which is a joke when you're running against Joe Biden. It's a joke also if you see this man's energy. And the fact that Trump just keeps going and he's got something big on his schedule every day. I looked at the trial of Donald Trump and said, this guy is just not an indoor cat. You know, now he's back out. He's unleashed. He's in his natural environment. And the debates are also natural habitat. I'm surprised that the Biden people are going to convicted felon and going so early. To me, it's kind of like it should be a last-ditch attempt. Also, everybody knows that. It hasn't really moved the polling. And it's a crazy thing to say when your son Hunter just was convicted of three felonies in a case that actually produced evidence and witnesses that were terrible for his case. And he faces another case in California. He's going to be sentenced in that case. So I'm a little surprised they'd, quote, go there. And I think it's the wrong way to approach Donald Trump.
Well, that's true. But if the president turns around and says, Hunter Biden got convicted, that's not the one he wants. He wants to say, Hunter Biden got convicted doing your dirty work, and that's going to be exposed in Los Angeles. Right. Is that the counter?
That's the key here, that it's the Biden crime family. It's the corruption in the Biden family that James Comer and others have already uncovered. Brian, speaking of debates, it's on the presidential debate stage in 2020 where Joe Biden first lied about Hunter's laptop, lied about those 51 so-called.
Should Trump bring that up and call him out and make him apologize?
Yes, and say, Joe, we can't even expect you to tell the truth tonight because the last time you and I were on the stage, you lied. You lied to the American people. You lied about Hunter's laptop, which now your own Department of Justice has said was real because they're investigating crimes, potential crimes based on the contents of that laptop. You lied about these 51 so-called national security experts and Russian disinformation. Apologize to America and assure us that tonight you won't lie. And then President Trump should just let Biden speak. Because the man can't do it. CNN, Tapper, Bash, the whole lot of them, they think they're doing this public service, this noble service by muting Donald Trump's mic. Go ahead and do that because you know what? I want Joe Biden to speak. I want that man to stand at the podium for 90 minutes without a teleprompter and without his doctor next to him, pumping him up with whatever, because he can't do it. And we all know that. So yes, he should call him out on that.
I'm fascinated. We got to talk again right before the debate next week. But Kellyanne, I want to get you to this. I could not believe the press secretary and others are blaming selected editing and misperception of the president wandering off of the G7, freezing on the stage with Barack Obama, and seemingly to freeze during the Juneteenth celebration. Listen to the explanation. Cut one.
You all have called this the cheap fakes video, and that's exactly what they are. They are cheap fakes video. They are done in bad faith. And some of your news organization have been very clear, have stressed that these right-wing critics of the president have a credibility problem because of the fact checkers have repeatedly caught them pushing misinformation, disinformation.
So they're saying what we're seeing is fake.
I know. I've been saying this for 3.5 years. I'm going to say it again. This election comes down to a couple things. Chief among them, Brian, is that if we believe what the Democrats say to us rather than what we see with our own eyes, then they win. They want you to deny what you actually see. And listen, this may have worked when Joe Biden was in the basement. And we only saw him like once a week in a gymnasium with those 12 weird circles and chairs in them. This doesn't work when you're the president of the United States, commander in chief, and we can see you live, raw, uncaught and unfiltered, being guided by Giorgia Meloni of Italy, being guided by Barack Obama, being guided by your wife, not knowing, shaking hands with the air, literally freezing. I mean, unless they have an AI-generated Biden in the can, I don't know how they're going to do this. James Carville is saying he wouldn't be surprised. He wouldn't, bet on Trump appearing at the next week's debate. He should be a no-show. Are you kidding? It's Biden who should get a doctor's note and say the dog ate my homework, the dog ate my debate prep. Because what in the world is Joe Biden going to do on that stage? Even when he's reading from a teleprompter, he fumbles and stumbles and mumbles and bumbles. So what is he going to do with no notes, no net, no staffers, right, no physical assistants to guide him around? And look, I think it's amazing that we saw this poll from NPR, PBS over the weekend that if everybody in this country who's eligible to vote voted, Trump would win. Because what have the Democrats been peddling for years? Hillary Clinton's still obsessed with saying it, loser she is, that, oh, my God, well, we win the popular vote. Her husband got 43% of the vote, everybody, 43 in 1992, and became a two-term president. Go check it out. But he got 68.8% of the electoral votes. Why is this relevant? Because now the polling by the mainstream media that Karine Jean-Pierre thinks are their friends, their polling is the one showing now Donald Trump is doing better among the popular vote. Not even that it matters, but it shows you that they're desperate. And this party, the Democratic Party, should have swapped out Biden and Harris a year and a half ago. Shame on them for not doing it. I look forward to whatever octogenarian the Democrats have next for 2028. I don't want to hear it somebody in their 40s or 50s, because apparently they're telling us the best kind of president to have is one that can't speak.
But the thing is, Kellyanne, remember when Mitch McConnell hit his head and he froze twice in public? Not one person tried to deny. No one denied. They just said, I hope he's okay. Right? Both
Absolutely.
Sides. So I hope he's okay. Man, he's not okay. He wasn't okay. He seems to be better now. So when this president freezes, don't deny that we're seeing or accuse me or anybody else of manipulating the video. You watch That's this right. thing. Barack Obama grabbed his wrist, pulled him, and then put his hand on his back. I didn't do that. You didn't do that. Yep. But you understand sometimes you're in a crisis. Everyone has different ways of handling a crisis. Can you talk about this way of handling a crisis?
It's terrible because they're showing us that they're worried. And Karine Jean-Pierre is wrong to tell the press corps of all people that these are deep fakes. These are deep fakes. The press corps travels with Joe Biden. They go abroad with him. They watch him in action. Literally, that's two words, in action. They watch his inaction in action. So that's the worst group to try to sell these lies to. And she's got to stop lying from the podium. It's really odious and onerous, and it's just wrong she should not be lying to the American people from the podium. She can talk about Donald Trump all day long. That seems to be their strategy. She can pretend that the CHIPS Act is the greatest accomplishment ever, and that the chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan, that even the generals and Joe Lieberman and folks like that were against, that was all great. She could pretend Kamala Harris is competent and confident and not a cackler and an evader and hasn't turned the vice presidency of the United States into a no-show job. There's usually nothing on her public schedule of any kind of note. She's my neighbor here in Washington. I mean, her motorcade is never in my way. I'm not even sure when she works and where she works. She can do all those things. But don't lie to us about what we see with our own two eyes. And everybody in this country, Brian, knows someone who's had an elderly relative
right.
who's just lost a couple steps. Paul Ryan said it last week on Fox News Channel. This is not the Joe Biden I debated in 2012 is what he said. He's gotcha. Totally different. Senators say that. Okay, so that's fine. But give the man grace and pity, not a second term as president of the United States at a very dangerous time.
And don't,
this guy got us into two new wars.
Right. And don't insult us by pointing it out. Kellyanne, great stuff. Appreciate it. Check out her podcast, The Campaign Managers, with Kellyanne and David Plouffe. Go get them, Kelly. Talk to you soon. Back in a moment.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So I want you to hear, I don't know, can I fit in Sean Gillis here, Eric, or not? Yeah, let's listen to Sean Gillis talk about cable news.
Imagine if you had a MSNBC dead. Just some guy every night at dinner, like, we need to start focusing on renewable energy. It's like, ew, dude, I didn't know dad was gay. Like, every Fox News dad, my dad watches Fox every night until he can't. That's how long they watch. They watch every night until they get so angry they have to go to bed. My dad will watch for like 2 hours, and then out of nowhere, he'll just stand up and be like, Mr. Potato Head's trance, I'm going to bed. This world's going to hell.
Well, that, you know what? I wish he was exaggerating, but do you remember Mr. Potato Head was? They did come out and said he was trans. And that was a story for a while. It sounded like they made it up. You're exaggerating. But that was the case. But he says that one of the other things he says is the graduation towards conservatism is all of a sudden you get interested in history. And they said that's the first step in order to be doing it. So I think that's pretty cool. Coming up next to Jimmy Failla, by the way, at the top of the hour, I'm going on Outnumbered. I'll play the man on a prestigious set that includes Kayleigh McEnany and Harris Faulkner. I don't know who else is going to be on, but I'm sure it'll be special. Listen, Jimmy's going to be in shortly. I want you to keep it here, and then we'll have a sports segment. We have a new world champion in the National Basketball Association, and the good news is it's the best team. Not with the best players, but the actual best team. That, for me, is great for sports.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back. In case you're not watching Fox Nation right now, we're on the app where you click on watch and scoot over. Jimmy Failla is here, normally sleeping right now. Because he does not have to be on for 25 minutes, Jimmy. But meanwhile, you don't have to be on really until Saturday, June 22nd at 7:30. You're going to be in Red Bank, New Jersey at the Hackensack Meridian Health Theater at the Count Basie Center. What are you going to be doing there? Funny stuff?
We're slanging jokes, and I'm so excited to go because the one thing I can tell you is you cannot offend a Jersey audience. Right. I've tried everything.
You did everything? You,
I've clubbed a baby seal, anything. They wind up not liking the seal. They're like, you know,
right.
He came down in that van that didn't put on its blinker. You know, they...
See, I'm just wondering, too, what's going on there? I mean, for Senator Menendez, are you watching what's going on right now? Then they have their controller just mm-hmm. got indicted.
Yeah.
Does anyone have any ethics there at all? I'm not saying that you're great with the unethical.
Yeah.
Like, the unethical find you funny, but isn't it crazy what's happening there?
It's insane. So just to, you know, point of clarification, if the senator's thinking about coming, you have to pay cash or credit card to get tickets.
No gold bars.
We can't take gold bars. It's unfortunate.
Right.
It's like, you know, time was.
Because it would be overpaying.
Shouldn't we give Menendez credit for one thing?
What?
Okay. We got about 3 decades worth of spam emails about this very issue. He's the only guy who got the gold bars out of Nigeria. Everybody else gave up their Social Security and got ripped off by a pretend prince. At least he got the bars.
Well, please tell me that's material.
No, that's just you and me having an above-average conversation.
Please tell me you're going to jot that down.
I'll give
Jimmy,
you.
I'm just sitting on the sideline, but that's got to be in the act.
That's funny. You know how they say that's gold. No, right? It's actually gold.
No, but it's amazing. He got caught already.
Yeah,
he got caught already. Got a hung jury. Didn't even get exonerated.
Yep.
It's not like, well, I'm glad they misread. No, he got a hung jury.
Yep.
So it means you're pretty guilty. We just couldn't get all the jurors.
Yep.
And he goes back and goes, okay, now let me get a new wife.
Do it again.
And let's try it again. She's got to be tall.
Uh-huh.
And she's and we're going to just go to an Egyptian guy.
Isn't that great?
And in turn, I like to get something really covert, like a car. Yeah. A Mercedes.
Everything gets a sequel these days.
Right.
But what's so funny is, like, as a guy who grew up watching Goodfellas,
right.
Do you remember how protective they were after the Lufthansa heist? Like, no buy fur coats, don't buy car. You know, he's like, take it off. Menendez went the opposite.
Right.
He's like, no, put it on. Put it on, honey.
And he gets to stay in foreign relations. What could be wrong?
Yeah, this shouldn't be happening. That's why it is a good time to go to a comedy show, by the way. The world is on fire, as you know.
Right.
I'm just roasting marshmallows.
So what do you think's going to happen in this debate in 2 weeks? Everyone's like, oh, these rules are all for Biden. They're all for Biden.
Yeah.
Really? I think the more I think about it, they actually might help Trump.
You want to know where they'll help Trump for real? He will come off better if he's not trampling the proceedings, doing the wrecking ball thing that he did in the first debate last time. But bigger than this, Trump is a really witty guy. And if you are forcing him to stand silent, you're also handing him extra time to think of comebacks and things to say. So I think they're going to showcase Trump unwittingly in a more disciplined fashion than we might be used to seeing him. And it might actually help him look more presidential.
Yeah, I also think the people that, well, the audience is good for Trump. Not if it's a hostile audience.
Yeah.
And, you know, who knows? If it's 2/3 Joe Biden and they're booing him, that ticks him off.
Yeah, no, that gets him worked up. You know, he goes into pro wrestling mode. He goes into heel mode. But these rules are, you know, they're aggressive. So the mics, there's no standing. Now I understand the Biden camp wants no talking. There's no talking for. I'm kidding.
Talking. Just stare straight. He's good at staring straight ahead.
All the answers are going to be pre-written and just handed out. No, it's embarrassing. I think Trump, to be honest with you, is going up against a wounded candidate in the sense that, I don't know, Bri, I believe he's auditioning to stay on the ticket. Why did they move it up this early? Unless, A, they believe the polls were as bad as they were, and B, they wanted a gap if they needed to make a change.
So a couple of things. It's pretty amazing how on sync MSNBC is with KJP. It's a deep fake.
Yeah.
Here's Nicole Wallace. Cut 5.
There's a growing and insidious trend in right-wing media, broadcast, print, and social media. It is to take highly misleading and selectively edited videos of President Biden and then use those videos to spread messages virally to cast doubt on President Biden's fitness for office.
And I could KJP basically say the same thing.
Yeah, we're living in the death of shame, by the way. I love how they're so selectively edited, there's no edits at all. The only one, when you use the word selectively, we're just selecting which embarrassing video to show.
Right.
Do we do the G7? Do we do the invisible people?
How dare you?
Do we do the Obama way, yanks him off the stage?
Right.
And you know this, because we all watch the video. Their pushback is to, again, cater to low information people with terms like debunked and cheap fake. Okay. But the videos they're posting don't actually absolve. They make it worse. Like, when you look at the G7 video, I stand by this. They're like, oh, no, he was addressing a parachuter. There's a parachuter at his feet. who he's not addressing.
So fantastic.
And he's like, and the parachuter who's in the wide shot is stuffing his parachute into a bag and not even looking up at Biden.
Right.
So the content's actually worse.
And if you really look at it, I break it down almost as if it's the deciding play in an overtime game to give the Raiders the victory. So you look at it, it's Macron leans over to Maloney, who sends Maloney, the Italian prime minister, out to get the American president and bring him back. Yeah. Now, I'm not talking about something yards away or miles away. We're talking all within 7 feet. But Macron's like, I'm not getting him.
Yeah.
You go get him. You're hosting. It's your turn, right?
It's your party.
Right.
I love this. Our president's campaign song is The Wanderer by Dion and the Belmonts.
As opposed to The Wanderers, which is a gang, which are coming through our southern border. It's a full circle.
They're all over the place right now.
So this murderer that comes through the gang, comes through and kills this lovely woman last year in 2023. He tried three times to get over. He comes into El Paso. They say no. Mm-hmm. Then he goes to New Mexico. They say no. Then he goes to Mexico. They say, we're still not letting you in. So then he's a gotaway.
Yeah.
Then he goes another. Oh, he gets the back of his head. Mm-hmm. So at what point do we arrest him? Hey, the reason why you're not coming in, you're a criminal. And not only that, you're a rapist. Come with me. Has anyone thought about arresting them at the border?
Imagine. And this is the part where cheap politics, like the left likes to engage in, because what did they make border security about? They claimed it was some form of discrimination.
Right.
Like, oh, this is racism, this is bigotry. But it's actually getting people killed, because both parties had agreed on border security.
Right.
Under Bush, under Obama. Obviously, when Trump ran on it, they, you know, kind of vilified. But the reality is, when these guys are mugging people and killing people, they're not asking who you voted for.
Right.
So liberals would be wise to stop pretending.
You see what happened with the Secret Service on Sunday.
Yeah.
The Secret Service guy on Sunday, he got robbed.
Secret Service guy.
They don't say it's he or she.
Robbed at gunpoint. Secret Service. These folks need to step up their game. The next thing you know, somebody's going to be sneaking coke into the White House.
Right.
Come on, Secret Service.
It'll never happen.
Get it together.
It'll never happen, Jimmy. And by the way, the investigation's over.
Yeah, that one's over.
Lost interest.
SCOTUS leaker. It's all over. These things just wash back out to sea.
That ADD is nationwide. What were we looking for? Doesn't matter.
That's why Menendez keeps stealing the gold bars. He's like, these investigations don't last. I'm a liberal.
He's like, how many days do I have to keep going to court? People keep showing up. The juries keep there. I
need
all these different outfits. I'm going to be an outnumbered at the top of the hour.
Yes, you are.
I'm going to play the man. What do I have to deal with there? Like, what do I have to learn?
What are you walking into today on a Tuesday?
What do you think I'm walking into?
Well, I got to be honest. It's a home game for you, okay?
Because it's in my actual studio.
Yeah, it's in your studio, and they love you on Outnumbered. There's not the same hostility towards you. Okay?
As in friends.
No. The couch is great to both of us. Couch loves me. Couch loves you. They're great to us. But it's a different vibe. When I'm on, okay, you know the earpiece?
Yeah.
The things being said to me in that earpiece are phenomenal. It's like I went to a dominatrix. Ha! Just call me every – don't do this. Don't say – it's unbelievable. But
they're really worried about you.
Yeah, not really. But I always wind up on Outnumbered when the craziest things happen. So let me give you this story. Do you remember the Chinese spy balloon?
Sure.
Well, we were engaged in a promotion that day called Wear Red. It was an awareness day.
Yeah.
And it just happened to be the day the Chinese spy balloon blew over. And we had a community college cab driver on the couch for the hour. And it was like one of the funniest days in TV history, because I'm in a red velvet tuxedo jacket. Like, I'm the guy who sells drugs to Fox talent and not actual Fox talent, which we all know the correct answer is both.
Right.
Okay. I'm both. But it was a fun day. I think you're in for a home game, and I think you got a fun news cycle right now.
Right. I just love, because they do have to go to the guy in the middle. So at one point, they're like, that balloon's in the sky. Jimmy, what are your first thoughts? why am I on the couch? Why am I on the couch? And by the way, watch. Don't eat too much chocolate.
Do we have a bullpen? Jimmy, your thoughts.
Right.
Can we bring in a lefty?
Can we bring in not a lefty here?
Yeah. You know, never.
There are no lefties.
Wouldn't happen.
They're just...
I say this, though. No, I want to give us credit. The lefties we do put on, the reason our audience gets mad at them is we allow them to articulate real liberal views. They're not pretend liberals. Like a Republican on MSNBC is like a chicken that works on the board at Popeyes.
Right.
It's like you can call them a Republican, but they're not looking out for the chickens.
I thought it was so unbelievable that Michael Steele used to run the RNC.
Yeah.
We used a soundbite yesterday. Like, the president overseas was just brilliant. One great speech after another. And I'm saying to myself, really? I'm like, come on. That's not even why you're on MSNBC to say that. Nobody thinks that.
But you didn't see. You weren't there when Biden was talking to that parking meter.
Right.
It was a good speech.
Right.
He picked up that banana thinking it was a phone.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. What do you think about them now coming out with ads? Well, let's listen a little.
Yeah.
Here's an ad taking on Trump. They are, in the beginning it was, I'm not really going to comment on these cases.
Now this.
This election is between a convicted criminal who's only out for himself and a president who's fighting for your family.
And it gets worse from there. $50 million later, does this do damage? We're not talking about Jimmy Failla, talking about the independents undecided.
I genuinely don't think it does, and the reason being is the metric people usually vote on, okay, is the metric that favors Trump. Their wallet, their security. You know, and I think in this short-term poll, okay, I think there's a reaction to verdicts. But I think as this thing plays out further, if you go, hey, I have less money and I don't really feel safe, gas is kind of pricey, and I think we're on the verge of World War III, I'm probably going to get over this guy paying Stormy Daniels by check when she normally gets paid in singles.
Right.
You know?
Right. But do you bring that up? Here's an example. Mm-hmm. This is a poll that came out on Politico. It says, the question, how does Trump's guilty conviction in the Manhattan case falsifying business documents impact your likelihood to support for him? More likely, 17%. Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
That's fine.
No impact, 38%. Less likely, 33%. Mm-hmm. So that if you're Trump's people, tactically, think mm-hmm. like sports, what do you do about that? Do you attack it head on or hope it goes away?
No, I think you can lean into it, but I think this is the truth. You know, the narrative that, you know, this is a political persecution might be true, but it's still not a metric people vote on. So I think he's got to go border, 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 economy, economy, economy. And I think he can win on that.
Right.
If he just keeps making the case about whether or not you were better off 4 years ago. I mean, the truth is what he did with Stormy Daniels or Michael Cohen did, and, you know, he followed along, however that shook out. It happened almost 10 years ago, and it doesn't affect anybody at a gas pump or a cash register at a grocery store. So I would stay on the message. Remember, always be closing. Remember Alec Baldwin, that's, you know, Alec, who's, by the way, has a new show coming out. He's giving it another shot. Hey, right. Good night, everybody. Sorry. I apologize.
You got Eric on that. Eric, you were laughing before I was laughing. I don't know why. But by the way, he does have a reality show coming out, which is interesting. Is he going to try to be likable? Because most of his shows, he had a show at MSNBC for a week, got in a fight, they pulled the show.
Yep.
Then he got in a fight in the parking.
I'm actually
starting to like him now. it's crazy.
He's feisty.
But what was I going to say, Jimmy? I have a different theory. You want to hear my theory?
Yeah, give it to me.
I say, listen, you call me convicted felon. I can't wait for the appeal on that. But I got to tell you what. Coming up this September, we're going to find out exactly what your son was up to.
Yeah.
And all those business deals you said you weren't in on, you sat there and had lunch with him, and I watched you golf with him, and then you called into a meeting in Ukraine with him. We're going to find out your role with your son, and what about the time you lied about not knowing your son's laptop and the 51 intel agents? Your Secretary of State rounded up those intel agents. You looked into that camera lying.
Yep.
Are you lying now?
Yep.
Can we wait for September when we see you again? We'll see how confident you are about convicted felons.
So you like
How do you feel about me saying that? Do you think that's making it worse?
No, I like the idea because the facts are on his side. The reason I keep saying to stick with the other message is what people vote on is not whether or not, they don't want to see these guys politically target each other forever, even though I think it's warranted. And I hope that if Trump wins, they do look into this, specifically the intel people.
Right.
Because if Trump belongs in prison for burying the Stormy Daniels story, what is the actual comeuppance for burying the laptop? The laptop was real.
And the biggest story is a stand-up comedian's got a real office and a real business, and you're dressed like an anchor now.
I adulted on this show. No, this is coming off before my show.
And we'll see you in 15 minutes.
Let's go.
I'm going to be back with some sports stuff and then Outnumbered, top of the hour.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. In about 10 minutes, I'm going to be on Outnumbered. And I appreciate you listening to our show all week long. So even though it's Tuesday, it feels like it's Friday already. And by the way, go to BrianKilmeade.com. We're going to be on stage on the 29th of June, couple of weeks, and then July 27th. And 29th will be in Indianapolis, Indiana. That is one of our hotbeds. Got a great affiliate there. Hope to see everybody in person. But it just makes me wonder if I need to know more.
More to know.
And you know what? I'll start with sports because the Celtics have just had a dominant year all year long. I was kind of wrong. They coasted on the last 2 weeks of the season. I thought, man, they got to get caught flat-footed. They didn't. They lost only a couple of games. They beat the Mavericks 106-88 in Game 5 after being blown out in Game 4. Besides that, they were the better team throughout. They play better defense. The East does, and they fall. Remember, they swept Indiana, the Pacers, Indiana, who managed to get by the Knicks, who basically had no stars left, including their best player with a broken hand. congratulations to them. Boston, just a very good team, a fantastic coach, a great example, just hard work. What I love about where this league is heading, they're not dependent on LeBron James or Kevin Durant picking their team and their friends and Chris Paul to go play together and bring a championship and then move on. This is a team. The Knicks are a team. The Pacers are a team. And you know what? The Mavericks are a team. Oh, look, Kyrie Irving, anyone could have had him. They picked him. And Doncic was a great draft pick. They trade Porzingis, and the rest are just bit players. Work hard, great vision. Dallas has a lot to be proud of. The Celtics are clearly the best team. Here's a little of, at the end, here's their coach, Joe Mazzulla, talking about how they won. Cut 33.
The most important thing, something that's really been really going through my mind throughout this process, is you can't lose sight of the people that came before us. I want to make sure every person that's worked for the Celtics, that's played for the Celtics, that didn't win, knows that their work and what they've done hasn't gone unnoticed, or it doesn't play a part in where we're at today. It can be so easy when you work for this organization and you don't win that the work that people put in just gets brushed over or gets ignored. When I first got here, the staff, you know, Brad's coaching, the staff that they had, the foundation that they built with these guys when they were young, the foundation of what we have is one of the reasons why we're here today. And so I think that's one of the first things that came to mind was, yeah, just because we won this doesn't mean what the people have done before us isn't just as important.
And Brad Stevens, of course, he's talking about the foundation. The Celtics have been good for a long time. To be great, you got to be good first. You don't want to just win one year, they break up, they go elsewhere, they try to get paid. The Celtics have built another great organization. They're almost even though they're salary capped out, unlike Tampa, but Tampa Bay Rays of baseball, they just, every year they're in contention. What about the MVP? Jaylen Brown got the Bill Russell Award. Talk about guys that are there before him. Listen.
Bill Russell would be so proud. The 2024 Bill Russell Finals MVP goes to Jaylen Brown.
What does holding this trophy mean to you?
It was a full team effort, and I shared this with my brothers. And my partner in crime, Jason Tatum, he was with me the whole way. So we shared it together.
I thought that was so cool. So congratulations on the Celtics. Hopefully in the offseason, you'll pull it down a notch, lose the intensity, and let the Knicks take the division, and hopefully next year the world title. We'll have to see. Next, Bidenflation has really hurt in people's vacation. Nearly 50% of parents with children under 18 take on debt, to go to Disney. With in-park food, which is expensive, beverages, which cost a lot, it's a huge drain. But the financial website named LendingTree did a survey about Americans and how they're vacationing at Disney World. It's the most popular vacation spot in America. It found that 24% of all Disney goers have accrued debt during their trips, along with 45% of parents with children under the age of 18. The average amount of debt of those parents, about $2,000. Concessions were the biggest driver of excessive spending, with 65% of respondents. Can you bring food in?
That I don't know, but I do know, unfortunately, people, friends and family that have put themselves behind
in debt
the eight
to
ball
go.
Just because they didn't want to disappoint their kids and not bring up the Disney World.
Right. Listen, we've been there a number of times. In the beginning, we said it's a really terrible apartment. We had to get on the bus to go everywhere, but had a great time. I like it for kids, but if you're an adult, I think you could suck it up. Go somewhere else.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.